My conversation with English golfer Mike Gaze took place just a few days after he had been part of the Edgar demonstration team at the Portugal Masters. Mike explains how he got involved in many sports and found that golf was right for him. He talks about losing count of the number of surgeries that he has had, and that his mantra is simply that you just have to get through things. Typical of a man who deals with things head on, Mike explains that the decision to have his leg amputated was quite simple, really. He took the doctors by surprise by taking the long-term view that it would be better for his overall health if he was to have an amputation. The hardest part was telling his parents, who had lived the experience with him for the best part of 25 years. It's revealing that Mike looks at the improvement that he's been able to make in life as a result of not suffering the same pain that he had experienced previously. Mike tells me that he feels lucky to have what he considers to be the best disability when compared with others, and clearly says that he has learned to be resilient. Enjoy the moment also seems to be one of Mike's maxims, and he loves competition, which I suspect is true regardless of who he's competing with, even if that is with himself. In this typically forthright conversation, Mike reveals how a message from Olympic and major champion Justin Rose was just the inspiration that he and other team members needed ahead of representing England golf in the European Team Championship for Golfers with Disability. I hope that you enjoy my conversation with Mike as much as I did. Really good to speak with you this morning, Mike, and I know that you've had a reasonably busy time. I know you just got back from the Portugal Masters not long ago, having been part of the Edgar demonstration team. And thanks very much for taking the time to have a chat with us about how you have got to where you are in your golfing career.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Tony. And yes, just back from Portugal. I was very honoured, really, to be part of that whole demonstration team set up that we had. It certainly had a big impact on me being part of Edgar the last couple of years, and really that's been the highlight so far. It's just been awesome, and last weekend was great. I've never really had much of an experience of tour golf. As a kid, I went and watched a couple of events in the UK, and generally you go and you either try and walk around and fight the crowds, particularly at the Open, or you go and sit in the stand and see stuff every so often. But being part of the behind the scenes last weekend was brilliant. You just get to mix it with the players, and in the end of the weekend, a couple of them know who you are, which is really cool. Looking forward to the next one, if ever that may be.
Well, hopefully there will be. Just to get a little bit into your background, Mike, if I can do. So what did you spend most of your time doing when you were not in school, say as a, let's say, a 12-year-old or something similar to that age?
Well, I would definitely say when I was growing up, I split my time either on the golf course or playing video games, and definitely should have been either on the course the whole time or studying instead of video games. But I've always played golf really as long as I can remember. My dad is a keen golfer, born and bred in Scotland, and he's always been a good golfer as well. And I remember probably my first golf memory was him taking me to the range as a young kid, and when I was about 10 or 11, we moved house right next to a golf course, and that really set everything in motion for me to take up golf as my main sport. My whole life I've had a bad right leg, and only in the last maybe 3 years and a couple of weeks that I had my leg amputated. And really, the issue I had with my foot where I didn't have any ankle movement, and I couldn't, my shin was deformed and my foot was a much smaller size than my left foot, my good leg. I couldn't really get involved in running sports, football. Tried my hand at basketball for a little while because I'm quite tall, but really golf was the only thing that I could do that was easy for me, even though it, when I had my leg, it caused me a lot of pain afterwards, especially in the later years. But as a kid, I was very lucky with school and the golf club I was a member at, or I am a member at, gave me a lot of opportunities for junior golf, junior opens, team events, stuff like that. So yeah, I've always been a bit of a golf nut, and it doesn't seem like it's going away at all yet.
What part of the country was that, Mike?
From Cambridgeshire, about 20 minutes outside of Cambridge.
Right. And can you remember more or less what age you were? You talked about that memory of going to the driving range with your dad. Can you remember more or less what age that would be? Or maybe they've told you how old you were then, I don't know.
I must have been something like 7 or 8, right. I think. I remember the driving range is still there. It's on the A14. I remember pretty much exactly what bay I was in and hitting balls in a big group of juniors and not having a clue what I was doing, which isn't that different to what it is now. But yeah, it must have been around about then.
You say it was a big group of juniors. Was it a kind of a junior school that you got involved with to start off with?
Yeah, our club always had a really good junior section, which is, like, at one point, our junior team was, if you were playing off two, you weren't going to get in it. And there was always a huge amount of juniors, especially, you know, in the school holidays in the summers. And the club always put on Wednesday lessons for juniors in the evenings. And then any school holidays, they would put on a big program of stuff just to get kids out and playing. And then every week you'd have a junior medal. So I think it was twice a week at one point. So you could just go out, play with your juniors and get a handicap reduction. So we're very well looked after. I don't see it quite as much these days, but I'm obviously not as involved as I was once upon a time. But yeah, we had a very good footing from the get-go at our club.
Do you remember who the professional was at that time that was teaching you?
Alistair Curry. And his assistant professional was Simon Burdett. They're the two. Simon, really, when I was there, was in charge of the juniors. And previous to that was a chap called Nathan. Simon and Nathan no longer pros, but Alistair's still the pro at Brampton.
Did you play any other sports then when you were at school? You mentioned basketball earlier, but was there anything else?
No, nothing really that I could say I really played. I'd always try everything. When I did a lot of swimming, that's kind of low impact on my leg, so that's something that I took up. But aside from that, really, it was golf or just having a kick about in the park.
So after you completed school then, can you remember what you really wanted to do for a living?
Absolutely no idea. I think as most juniors, you've definitely got dreams of being a professional golfer, and that certainly would have been something. I think it would have been very difficult no matter what, how much talent I had with particular issues I had in my leg, because I spent a lot of time out having surgery. But really, I wanted to be a stockbroker for a little while. Even going through university, where I did business and politics in Birmingham, I had no idea what I wanted to do when I got out of it. And I think that's something golf-related would have been nice, but I never thought it was going to be a career for me. So I never really looked into it that much, despite the fact that Acushnet and Titleist are about 5 miles away from my house.
Yeah. When did you first become aware of being a little bit different or actually having a disability?
Well, I've had surgery my entire life, really, from the get-go, and I would say that I've always been aware of it in the sense that I've always known that I have to go and do things like go and have surgery, whereas the other kids don't. I've always been fully aware that I'm out, it could be for months at a time, whereas people aren't. And I wouldn't necessarily say I ever felt too down or too upset about it. I was very well looked after at home and was given a lot of support. But over the years, I think if you've always grown up with it, you definitely get a better handle on it. I think if something had happened when I was in my early teens or something like that, to suddenly change your life, that becomes a lot more difficult. But then for me, the more and more it went on, I took a whole year out at one point in year seven, which wasn't really the end of the world. But when you get older and you are then missing more social things, or you at university, I still had a few surgeries, so I missed a bunch of stuff there. So that's when it really starts to have an impact, or it had an impact on me. But, you know, I've always felt from day one that it is what it is. You can't change it. You can only try and improve it. And you just got to get on with it. For me, definitely something that always gets me through is that there's always someone worse off, no matter what situation you're in. You know, I'm very fortunate in a lot of ways, so it's sitting there and being upset about it, that is perfectly acceptable sometimes, but you just have to get through things no matter what they are, big or small. That's always been my mantra.
Yeah, and I remember you mentioned last time we spoke that you'd had something like 25 surgeries in 25 years, there or thereabouts.
I've actually lost count, but I'm pretty... I had come out of university and I was, because of the deformity that I had, it really meant I didn't have a lot of cushioning in my ankle. It was very hard to walk on long distances or any distance really. And I used to walk around the golf course, carry my bag, but then that would put me out really for a day of just being in pain. Like, you get up from the sofa and everything hurts. So, I met with a doctor in the States who came up with some ideas, which I wasn't really a fan of, and then came back here, and doctors were suggesting, we could do this, or we could do this, and I said, why don't we just amputate it, which I'm sure they don't get that kind of question posted very often, but I was trying to think long-term for my health. If I have a significant limp for the rest of my life, how is that going to affect everything up my knees, my hips, my shoulders, everything? It has such a big knock-on effect. And all of the solutions that they were coming up with were just to kind of polish it a little bit. There was never a solution which was going to definitively fix anything, apart from having it amputated. And at the time, we're very fortunate in the time that we live in that prosthetics and the science around it gets better all the time. So looking at it, really, it didn't become a difficult decision to make. The most difficult thing for me was telling my parents that, look, I'm going to have my leg amputated, because they had lived and breathed it just as much as I had, and probably more when I was a kid. All the burden fell on them. So to turn around after 25 years and it invariably just say, look, it hasn't worked. We've got to nip it in the bud, and that was it. Really, when it came down to the decision, it was a piece of cake, to be honest. It was just, let's do it, let's get on with it. And the one thing I said to my surgeon was, I want to still be able to play golf and I want to still be able to snowboard. And I've been able to do both of those to a better standard than I ever could before, and do a whole lot of other things as well.
Interesting comment there, and it seems a very matter of fact, and obviously for you it was a relatively straightforward decision to make. But interestingly, you say that you now feel as though you're a better golfer, and it's also improved your skateboarding. So can you tell me something about that?
Interesting.
Snowboarding, generally, I was in a lot of pain. The way my foot was shaped, it was not very compatible with a snowboard boot. So I could get through a week, but I'd always come back with damage and cuts and stuff like that. So it really, I had one of the things that probably triggered me to say, right, this is enough, is I was in Austria and skied for a day, not even a day, and then couldn't. It was just in so much pain, and this was one day into a week's holiday, and I just said, nah, forget it, I'm going home, and flew back that evening. But the golf, really, I had a couple of issues golf relating, where my foot and my leg was still a little bit shorter than my left, which has a knock-on effect in your swing. And then the pain wise, the pain side of things, like you could have a good day, but some days you could play six holes and then it starts to hurt, and then that's in the back of your mind and you restrict yourself and you don't swing as well as you could be. And I haven't walked around golf courses as much as I used to, not by any stretch of imagination. I have a golf board now, but I can play an entire round of golf, could quite easily play 36 holes in a day and not have any ill effects at all in my leg or in my knee. And definitely that has had a big impact on me being able to raise the standard of golf. And the height issue has been dealt with, so I don't have as many issues as I did previously. There's still plenty of adaptations you need to make being an amputee, but it's let me practice more, it's let me get out on the course and work on things more, and then I can implement techniques and stuff like that on the range a lot easier when you're not in pain. It's quite simple when you look at it that way. And before I had my leg off, about a year prior to that, I got down to 4.2, and I was very happy with that. I'd always been my target to get to 4. And then my target ultimately is always to get to scratch, and now I'm off 3.3. So it's been a big step, and long may it continue, really. It's just everything feels a lot better. Got to iron a couple more things out, but I definitely feel now that scratch is much more of an attainable goal than it ever was prior to having my leg off, which is saying something about the prosthetics.
Have there been any adjustments that you've had to make, not just in golf but also in life, because you are an amputee now?
Yeah, you definitely have a lot. I'm very fortunate in the sense that I'm a lower leg single amputee, which really, if you're going to have anything missing, that's the easiest part of you to have missing. Certainly anything above the knee or bilateral or arms, very difficult to deal with. But it goes from small things to big things, really. When I take my leg off at night, so if I need to get up, I either have to hop around or put it back on, which takes a little bit of time and can be a bit noisy. So you have to make adjustments. And I think every single leg amputee has fallen over once in their life. That's my experience of speaking to other amputees. And when about 6 weeks prior, post having my leg off, I was due to go and have my first prosthetic limb delivered. So everything was on track. I was making really good progress. And I got up from my desk at work to go use the bathroom, which is no more than 3 yards away, and I hopped. I didn't put my leg on, I didn't use my crutches. I hopped. I kicked the leg, kicked the door threshold, and then stuck my leg out to stop. However, my foot isn't there anymore, so the natural reflex was to put my foot out, and that just meant I hit the ground with the end of my stump full on. Cure night in A&E. Where nobody knew what to do with me, because it's like a fresh wound on a amputee scar, which is still pretty fresh. So you certainly become a lot more aware of your surroundings when you're walking, and that has a big impact on life in general. And like, I was in Italy this weekend, and their roads are not very good, especially to walk on. So you're constantly aware of, if I had two legs and two fully functioning ankles, you don't really consider that stuff. But when you have a prosthesis, you don't have really any ankle movement. So you don't have any reaction in your foot to what the ground is. So you can quite easily get tripped up. And on a golf course, ours in particular has plenty of burrowing animals, and I've lost count the amount of times you don't see a little rabbit hole or something like that. And that's bad enough when you've got an ankle, but when you don't, it's so jarring. You don't want to spend your whole life looking down at the floor, but you certainly have to be a lot more aware of where you're walking. And the week prior, prior to having my leg off, I keep saying it, but I was fortunate because I knew exactly when and where I was having my leg done. I knew what was coming. I knew roughly what to expect. A lot of people just wake up in hospital minus a limb. And I had an automatic Jeep, and I was looking into what adaptations might need to be made there. And I went in and got it adapted with a left foot accelerator pedal. So I could control both the brake and the accelerator with my left foot as opposed to with your right foot like you would in the UK. Had that done, cost probably €500, something like that. And then I tried it for about a week, couldn't get on with it, put my leg on, my prosthetic leg on, and that's how I've been driving ever since. So there's some adaptations you make and then realise you don't need. but yeah, if you have a mobility issue like mine that's fairly minor in the grand scheme of things, fortunately I don't need to make any grand changes to my house or anything like that. I do use a golf board to get around on the golf course, which is like a big motorized electric surfboard, effectively, or snowboard, with wheels. When I first started playing golf again in early 2015, I was renting a buggy from the golf club and playing maybe twice a week, so that started to add up, and I was considering buying a secondhand buggy, which is something I wouldn't have had to do previously. And around about the same time, these golf boards came on the market, and I was fortunate enough to know someone in the golf media who was testing them, and he invited me along to help do a review, and thought, oh, this is cool, and talked to the distributor, and it was around about the same price as a secondhand golf buggy. So for me, that was a no-brainer, and I picked one of them up, and that has been a huge impact for me. Playing golf and even walking the dog, I use it in the mornings and the evenings to walk my Poochie out on the golf course. And since then, I spoke to another amputee who saw that I had one, and I chatted with him about the benefits that I had with it. And next thing I know, I look on Facebook and he's got one as well.
Are there any specific shots that you find difficult now because of your disability?
Straight ones, 3-foot putts, up and down, bunker. yeah, there's definitely a shot and a couple of things in my swing that I struggle with. And, you know, I don't really like using it as an excuse, because I know I'm a decent golfer and can get it around there. But I definitely feel like when you, because you don't have as much ankle movement or as much knee movement because of the way the prosthetic sits on your leg, it's easy to load up the weight on your right-hand side. So I'm a right-handed golfer, so backswing and all the weight goes onto the right. Then if you can't come back down and turn through and transfer that weight back across to the left, I find that my swing gets stuck right on the inside, and invariably that either means it's a block push cut, which can be really destructive, or I don't really do this very often, but the opposite of that is you flip your hands over way too quickly to recover it and you hit a big pull hook, both of which are really destructive to a round of golf, especially if you're playing something like an Edgar event, where you can hit a bad shot, that's fine, but if you hit a really bad shot, that can really damage your chances. Fortunately, it doesn't affect the short game very much. Anything less than a full swing isn't too badly affected, particularly around the greens. And it's definitely the longer club that I have, and I'm sure a lot of amputees feel this as well. The longer club you have, like most amateur golfers, the less control you might feel with it. It means getting in the wrong position and then recovering from it, for whatever reason, is more difficult. And because I don't really pivot on my right foot, like you'd see a lovely textbook golf swing, I have to compensate more by trying to turn my body through, leave my right foot flat maybe, but if I can't get my whole body turned through impact, that's when it does create some issues. And it's just like anything, getting on the range and trying to iron it out. It's been a slow but successful process so far.
Do you work with anybody, any coach, any professional to help you reach your potential?
I do. I've flitted through a few coaches in the last 10 years, but I am very fortunate at the moment that I have a good friend of mine, Adam Pike, who is the assistant pro at my golf club, Brampton. He was a very good county golfer and is a playing professional as well as being a coach, and we both look at the swing in a very similar way. I think we're both quite analytical about it and like to look at what positions we're in and how the numbers affect that. So for the last year I've been working with him, and I often, either in the lead up to a tournament, we'll say, have you got time this week, can we go have a quick session? Or during a tournament, I'll be hitting big push blocks and I'll be calling him saying, oh God, what am I doing? So he's certainly been a big help to me over the last year. And he can see some things might be difficult with my like biomechanics, and it's how we work with that to try and achieve the best swing for me. You know, nobody, very rarely do you see a perfect golf swing. And certainly being on tour last week, everyone swings it differently, but they all hit it well, and that's the most important thing. It's just about how to get, regardless of your shape or how you swing, get that club head back to the ball in the right way.
What have you learned about yourself as a person through playing golf?
That's a good question.
Well,
I would certainly say that I'm resilient, and I always tackle problems head on. I always feel like you've got to, whether that is a problem in your life like my leg or any sort of issue. And that does filter down to something which, like golf, which is not as serious as life or death or as normal things in your life. But, you know, whenever I set myself a target, I want to achieve it. I do that with golf. If I have issues that I feel like something in my swing is not right, then I won't just aimlessly go and carry on trying to figure out on the course. I will make a concerted effort to go and fix it. Over the years, I've got a lot better at staying in the moment of, right, it's one golf shot. When you have the butterflies and stuff like that, I say to myself, this is what you want. This is why you work really hard to get these moments. Certainly last week, having the opportunity to play the 18th with a European Tour Pro in front of hundreds of people, you're terrified in a way, but you're loving it, and you've got to stand up and be like, yeah, this is what I want to do. So it's being able to embrace that, which I feel like golf has certainly given me a lot of, and being able to enjoy the moment. Life can certainly pass you by very quickly, so you've got to stop and enjoy things while they're happening to you.
Golf is obviously an important part of your life. What do you think that golf actually means to you?
Well, it means a lot. I mean, I've got my wife playing golf this last year, and she really enjoys it, which is fantastic. I love spending time with her out on the golf course, and it's something that we can share. It's something that I can share with my dad, who I don't see very often because we live quite a long way apart, but in a couple of weeks I'm going to be spending a whole week playing golf with him, so I'm really looking forward to that. It's always given me a good opportunity to, despite the issues I've had with my leg, to get out and have social life through that. Competitiveness has been, I love competition, I love playing in comps. All the way throughout, as soon as I started playing junior golf, you get involved in that kind of thing. And the beauty of golf, unlike really any other sport, is that regardless of what physical handicap you have or don't have, we have a golf handicapping system where I might be missing a leg, but I can still compete with all of the best golfers in the county, certainly in my club. And that's the beauty of having a golf handicap, is it's a level playing field. And my mates who have never played golf before, after a few weeks or months, they get a handicap, and then we go and play Stapleford and we can shoot the same score. So it's so inclusive. Really unlike anything else. Like, as a junior or as a kid, I couldn't have played football, couldn't have played on a team sport, something like that. It just doesn't happen if you're not fit and healthy. So golf gives you a lot, certainly.
In your experience, Mike, are we doing enough to introduce more people to this sport?
If I speak from experience and I look back at how I got into golf post-amputation, I always had obviously an issue in my leg, and I probably could have played in events like Edgar with my condition, but never really considered it, never really gave it much thought. When I came out of hospital, there was nothing jumping out at me, in the sense that you don't get an information pack. You get a few bits and pieces at the hospital, if you're lucky, that a local sport charity or something like that has dropped off. If I think about golf and attracting people to golf, and I read golf magazines and look at a lot of golf media, but people don't if you're not interested in it. And I personally think there is a big struggle now with getting young golfers involved. I think there's a huge issue that we're going to face in the coming years for young female golfers. Young male golfers, maybe not so much, because like most sports, it's male dominated. And disability golf, from my perspective, if I hadn't sat and tried to figure out who does what, and spent a lot of time doing it, because I was already a golfer who was desperately keen to get back involved in things, and I knew that being an amputee would open up some more doors. If I was just thinking, oh, maybe I'll take up golf, I think it's very difficult just to go and find something. Like any sport, I will say you have to be willing to go and try something. You do have to put a little bit of legwork in. I think once you are aware of everything that goes on, especially with Edgar, once you figure out how it works, then it's amazing. It's stunning how much great work goes into it. I think there might be a little bit of a barrier getting into it, in that it's just difficult. If you're based in the UK, for example, if you type in disability golf into Google, you are presented with three or four different organisations and you haven't got a clue where to start. And I started speaking to one of them, turned out to not be what I was after. And really by chance did I find the organisation I ended up joining. So it's tough. It's very tough. And I find this in... I play amputee football as well, which is more and more popular and gets more PR and spotlight, not as much as disability golf does, but one of the huge issues we have is recruitment of people. And how do you find, because there's something like, I can't remember the number, but there are thousands of amputees, or thousands, and obviously tens of thousands of disabled people, particularly in that kind of category of young, wants to try sport, doesn't even have to be young, but people who want to try sport. And how do you get out to them? And how do you reach those people? And it's a very difficult task. I think it will get better with social media, stuff like that. I think that's an incredibly powerful tool that charities and sporting bodies for disability need to use more of, because it's just so ingrained into everything now. You could put in a concerted effort into some sort of campaign, and I'm sure no matter what you did, you would see a large increase in interest. But it is difficult, and I don't have a lot of the answers. I try and involve people when I see them in disability golf. If they're not, I know a lot of my teammates who I play football with are dead keen to try it. Just trying to get them out there and do it. Usually isn't compatible with a football season, but we're trying.
Well, that's great to hear, and you make some excellent points there. Perhaps we can use you and help us in that space. Tell me about the heroes and the role models that you might have had as you've progressed throughout your career.
Well, always as a junior and as a kid, it was Tiger. You just watched golf from him. And even, I mean, I wasn't really old enough to appreciate 1999. But looking back on it, it just amazes you. It makes you want to go out and play golf. And even him, Phil Mickelson, and even these days, I mean, Rory, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and DJ, you just watch these guys play golf, and it's just like, this is such a different level. And watching people like Thomas Peters last week on the range, and all of those guys, when you see a tour pro hit balls, it is a completely different experience. But like, role model wise, was always, yeah, I always had three role models in sport, because I always loved watching sports people be at the absolute top of their game. And it's just so, I never had an issue with watching someone dominate a sport. A lot of people like to see competitiveness, but if you see Tiger Woods tearing up a field and winning 6 or 8 tournaments on the spin, it's just incredible. Same with Roger Federer, Ryan Giggs were always the people that you would go out my way to watch. In more recent years, because I always try to avoid being too worried about my leg and disability and looking at stuff like that, but ever since, really, a huge trigger point for me to try more sport since I had my amputation, it must have been a year or 9 months post amputation that I was watching the Invictus Games, and I was sitting there, I wasn't inactive by any stretch of the imagination, but I sat there and thought, well, what else is out there? And something in the back of my mind went, I was 25 when I had my leg amputated, so I was thinking, if I put my mind to something now, I could get in the Paralympics at some point. So watching that and watching those guys, and you see, well, these guys are still elite athletes, and what they're doing is utterly awesome. And I think one of the distance runners, something like that, recently ran a time that would have been equivalent to able-bodied time in an Olympic final. That made me go out and just see what was out there, and watching no one in particular, but just watching everyone. That week I ended up trying 5 new sports, of which I took up wheelchair basketball for nearly 2 years. Tried all sorts. But when you come to disability sports, I think it doesn't matter who you are, how famous you are, if you can show other people who haven't been involved yet that having a disability or whatever issue you have is not necessarily a barrier to anything. The only disability when you have something like that is a bad attitude and a lack of desire to go out, try something. It's amazing the scope of stuff that we have these days, from people being almost completely paralyzed can still go out and play a sport, be involved in a team. And even with golf, with the paragolfers, you have people who are exceptionally disabled but can still go out there and compete with other players at their highest level, which is amazing. So as a kid, you see and you get a lot of influence and you look up to your heroes, but they're on a screen and they're not really, you know, they're there, but they're not really there. But now, ever since having my leg amputated, I get to meet heroes all the time. It's just people who are out there doing what they do in disability golf and other disability sports. And I'm constantly amazed by what I see.
Unsung heroes, I guess, is the term there, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned Paralympics, and What do you think it might mean to golfers with disability for the game to become a Paralympic sport?
I think if golf were to get in the Paralympics, it would be the pinnacle of golf for every disabled golfer, bar none. I think it would be such a step up from Now, what we have at the moment is fantastic and is beyond really what I was dreaming of when I first started looking into disabled golf. The fact that effectively we have a European tour of disability golf is incredible. But then you have, what I can gather, a couple of world championships, so they don't really seem to come across like that necessarily. But if you can have golf that becomes fully fledged Paralympic sport, which is the pinnacle of almost every sport in the world, the Olympics or the Paralympics, to then have that opportunity to compete in that, to be part of Team GB or Team wherever you're from as a golfer. I think we saw it in the Olympics last year, or a couple of years, whenever it was, the pride from everyone, even though it did have a rocky run-up, the pride and the reaction to it afterwards was just incredible, and it shows how important that was to even where it won't be the pinnacle of golf for professional golfers, but it was still right up there, and it is still such an incredible experience for them, and you could tell how much it meant to people like Justin Rose and Kuchar and Stenson to win medals for their country, which is not something you get to do very often. To have that opportunity potentially in paragolf, Paralympic disability golf, would just be incredible. If it's on the horizon, then it is 100% my goal to win Paralympic gold in golf one day, hopefully.
You actually mentioned Justin Rose there, and I know that you were part of the England team that played in the European Golf Association Team Championship for golfers with disability at Quinta del Lago earlier this year. And I understand that Justin Rose sent you a message of support.
Yeah, he sent us a letter and he referenced the Olympics in that he found it to be an incredible honour to be part of the Olympic team. And he gave us, you know, insight and motivation and all of the things that you want to hear as a member of an elite level sport is people, peers and other great sports people to talk to you on a similar level, because in our world of disability golf, we were competing at the highest level there this summer, and we were competing with really the best golfers in Europe. And then to have that kind of insight and praise, or whatever you want to call it, from Justin Rose is just fantastic. To think that, one, that we're on his radar, and that, two, he was happy to take the time to write us a letter and give us that information is just brilliant. And I think the more you can get, speaking objectively, the more people who are involved in, the more famous golfers, that kind of thing, can only be good for disability golf.
Was that the first time that you'd played for England in the European Championships?
Well, the England team really has been set up this year with backing from England Golf. So it's the first time that I'm aware of that England Golf has started to put in a plan and a framework for a disability golf team. So I'm very fortunate enough to be selected for it this year, and as part of the squad, the first thing we did was in March, and that was a match against France, the French national team, in Dunkirk, which I'm very happy to report that we won. We played it in a very similar format to the European Team Championships, and the French team used that as one of their selection criteria. Then there were six of us there, and then four of us played in the European Team Championships, and again, very fortunate enough to be picked for that. That was an awesome honour to be part of the England team, and that's it. For me, as a disabled golfer, that's the top level for me, is to go and play for England, and I've achieved that, and fortunately, hopefully we've been showing that we are a very good prospect for England golf, and that we've come back with silverware on multiple occasions now. Three of us were in Sweden in the Swedish Disabled Open Invitational, and we won the team aspect of that. and my good friend and golf partner George Groves won the individual event. So we've had a very good year so far, and hopefully long may it continue with the England disabled golf team.
Just to take a little bit wider, are there any adjustments that you might make to make the game a little bit more accessible for golfers with disability, a bit more user-friendly?
I think one of the key difficulties to get people into golf, particularly disabled golfers, is finding somewhere to play or to start. And most of us would have started on a driving range, and I've certainly felt this with my wife, is that we practice all the time on the driving range. We might go out on the course and practice around the greens, but getting into golf and playing golf fully from a rank beginner's perspective, it's intimidating at the best of times for able-bodied people to go out and play golf. I think having awareness of where there are short courses, pitch and putts, par three courses, nine holes, stuff like that, or just generally short courses, is very important for beginners or anyone with a disability, really, because you, especially if you are disabled and you have perhaps an issue with walking long distances, you don't necessarily want to be out on the ninth hole and it doesn't come back to the clubhouse and it's very far away. You don't necessarily want to be out there if you feel like, how am I going to get back if something plays up or if I start to be in pain? And there's lots of golf courses, mine included, which goes all the way out to nine and then comes back. It's not a loop or anything like that. Showing people where they can start and, you know, making it fun. I think without a shadow of a doubt, if you are starting out with golf, you need to go and start and speak to a PGA professional, explain, I want to start playing golf, and hopefully the PGA professional's reaction should be, that's brilliant, let's go have a good fun time and get you introduced to it. If we find out that it's not really what you're after, then fine, no harm, no foul. But you've got to make golf fun, because it can be so frustrating at times, especially as a beginner. And just having, you know, it kind of ties back into, where do you find this information? And something, and I'm sure there is stuff out there. I mean, I'm fortunate enough, I've been playing golf for so long, I don't necessarily need to look at these kind of things, but making sure the information is there and it's accessible for people, and having something to say that, yeah, this golf course, how it's quite a broad term to say disability friendly, because you might have someone who's a para golfer or wheelchair golfer, and is it really that disability friendly? Whereas it might be for someone who's got learning difficulties or is an amputee, but it may not be for someone else. But just having that information now in this day and age, clear and in front of you, will be so important, I think, going forwards.
Just a couple of general questions here, Mike. Other than the fact that you snowboard, you play amputee football, you're a university graduate, is there anything else that might surprise us about Mike Gaze?
Well, I have an interesting career in the sense that I do a job which no one has generally ever heard of, but then as soon as I tell them, they think, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. I run a business which is an international pet animal transportation company, and we move pet animals, cats, dogs, horses, guinea pigs, anything in between, anywhere to anywhere in the world. We move over 1,000 pets a year, completely internationally. And I say that to people, and immediately their first reaction is, wow, I didn't know that happened. And then they go, oh yeah, I know someone who moved, and invariably someone had a dog and it went into quarantine. And it's so funny, because you would never think of it, but as soon as you speak to someone about it, they will start talking to you about it. And always the first question is, what's the strangest pet you've moved? Yeah. And I've always got two answers for that. The strangest pet we ever actually moved were sea monkeys, which are tiny little fish things. And they're in a tiny little pot, and they're kids' pets. We we are fortunate that we deal with a lot of corporate relocation. So the company moves the owner of the pet and they pick up the tab. So these sea monkeys we picked up, we flew them to wherever they were going and we delivered them on the other end, and the kids were very happy to see them. And the best one that we never did was a chap wanted us to pick up his cat from New York in Manhattan at 2 a.m, something like that, which is fine. People have weird and wonderful requests, and part of our ethos or our thinking is to, yep, whatever the client wants, we'll go and do. And our driver got to his lovely midtown apartment, got into his house, and the guy said, oh, thank you for coming, here's my cat. He opens the door and it's a fully grown Bengal tiger in his apartment in the middle of Manhattan. And our driver is holding a cat carrier, which is very small, and he says, I'm afraid it may technically be a cat, but it's not the kind of cat that we can help with. So we had to politely and unfortunately say, oh, we can't do this one, I'm afraid. And then, yeah, aside from that, complete pet lover. I'm fortunate in that my office is in my home. I have 7 staff members in here with me, but I also have my office dog, Laika, the boxer, who sits and is very helpful for us, especially if we're having a long day. You can sit and spend a bit of time with her. So, yeah, really, that's my day-to-day life, which a lot of people do find very interesting and very out there.
Absolutely. Tell me, if you could play a four ball with anybody, dead or alive, who would your 3 playing partners be?
Oh, I'd certainly love to play around the golf with Tony Bennett, Juan, and maybe Manuel, but I'm sure we'll get around to that at some point.
For sure.
Yeah, I always see this question, and I've never really sat there and thought, oh, actually, who do I want to play with? You know, I would say, so you're going to give me 2 here, and one would be golf related, and it would be Tiger, Arnold Palmer, and Ben Hogan. And then, because I read Ben Hogan's book on the fundamentals of golf, and just I would have loved to have seen him in action and discuss golf with him, because I'm a bit of a golf nerd and love the way professionals swing the ball. And him and Arnold, I think, would have such cool insight into all of that. And I just don't think that you can get away with ever not wanting to play with Tiger Woods in his prime. Would have been just incredible.
Just on that one, and I'm sure you'd be aware that the golf course that you played last week, Victoria in the Algarve, was designed by Arnold Palmer and his corporation.
Mm. And I've been fortunate to play a few Arnold Palmer courses, and you know, you'd be very lucky to play courses like that. And to get his insight, you know, maybe in another life, a golf course architect would be a very cool career. To see his insight into how to create a golf course, and you know, someone like that, he obviously lived and breathed golf, and everything about it would be such a cool way to spend a few hours. I'm sure I would spend the front line being unable to speak and get any sort of intelligible conversation going, but you know, guys like that, I'm sure you would just sit back and listen to and soak up so much.
So that's your 4 ball for Saturday. So what about your 4 ball for Sunday?
Yeah, I would definitely split it with Ben. I love history. I love historical politics. I can't say I love politics at the moment, but I would love to spend time with JFK, who was a fairly handy golfer, I think. And you know, someone like Disraeli would be a very cool person to speak to and understand. You know, a lot of the history of the UK comes from that kind of era. People like JFK certainly ruled for or helped shape the world, even though it was a very brief tenure of his. And then probably someone like Bill Clinton, I think, or Barack Obama would be a very cool person to spend some time with on the golf course. I think US presidents certainly seem to spend a lot of time playing golf, and I think it would be a good way to spend a few hours shooting the breeze with those guys. So yeah, I think that it would definitely go down that kind of route. It's really simple from my perspective. It's just to embrace it. You certainly have a disability, and I have a disability, and it does affect us. There's no two ways about it. We have challenges, but you know what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and I certainly believe that. And you have to look at all the opportunities that are still out there. And I've met plenty of people who are in significantly worse conditions than I am, but they still take their opportunities. They still look at life as giving them opportunities to do things. Rarely, very rarely do more doors get closed than open. Certainly for me, and I would say this to anyone in my position, there were doors that shut, but you know, I can't even think of which ones were shut because so many more were opened. You have just got to go out there. You know, you can sit there and feel sorry for yourself, and that's perfectly, and it's an understandable way of reacting to any sort of bad news or anything like that, but eventually you've just got to pick yourself up and see what's out there. It's so easy to find the information, so just get out there and do it, and give me a call anytime if anyone needs to speak to me.
Well, that's actually one of the questions I was going to ask, is that if people would like to reach you, how can they find you?
That's a good question. I should probably set up a better Facebook page for my disabled golf and disability exploit side of things, but people can find me on Twitter at Mike Gaze, on Facebook. I don't think you can find me on Facebook, but I'm more than happy for my email address to go out for people to drop me a line, contact Edgar, anything really, who will then let me know, or England Golf, anything like that. I'm more than happy to speak to anyone about anything relating to disabilities, golf, getting into golf, all of that kind of stuff.
Fantastic. Mike, is there anything that you'd like to discuss that until now we've not touched upon?
No, I think that's been the most comprehensive conversation about golf I've had in a while. No, it's been fantastic. And I don't really think I have anything to add other than I can't wait to see what the future holds with Edgar.
I think it's going to be very exciting. I think we've got a lot of very committed people who, the vast majority, do their work voluntarily. They've all got busy jobs. They're all working hard in their day-to-day lives. But they're very committed, and they're working towards our objectives, which are to help more people with disability try the game of golf and get involved in the game of golf that we all enjoy. And to create a pathway for those players that want to start as a participant, but then maybe eventually end up as a competitor, and give them the opportunity to play at the local level, then the national level, the international level, the World Championship, and then Paralympics. And each one of those events should be approved by the respective bodies and the proper bodies for golf. So yeah, a lot of good work being done.
If everyone works half as hard as you do, I'm sure we will be absolutely fine.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Mike. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy, and it's been really fascinating chatting to you. I wish you all the best for the rest of the season. I think you're on the way down to Portugal later in the year to play in the last event, so I wish you all the best in that. So thanks again.